from the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, a victory at the Supreme Court, a presidential candidate calls for a new Bill of Rights, and the state of California raids a Christian school. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and homeschool dad. I want to begin today's show by letting you know that in a little more than a week, Family Research Council's fiscal year will come to an end, and we need your help to finish strong. If you can, head over to TonyPerkins.com and help us with a gift. And right now, your gift will be doubled through the generous help of friends of this ministry. That website, once more, is TonyPerkins.com. We begin today's show with some big news that we've talked about several times here, and that's about the World War I cross-shaped memorial in Maryland. On Thursday of this week, the Supreme Court, in a 7-2 decision, said that the cross-shaped memorial does not violate the Establishment Clause. Joining guest host Sarah Perry to talk about the court's decision is FRC's Vice President of Public Policy and the Director of the Center for Religious Liberty, Travis Weber.
Travis, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you very much.
So before we actually get to the legal implications and the decision itself, can you give us a little bit of a factual update on how this case ended up at the Supreme Court?
Yes. Yeah, so the cross-shaped memorial had been in place for many, many years. It was established and erected to commemorate and honor the memory of those who perished in World War I in the Bladensburg area. And, things seemed to be fine for many, many decades. Then the American Humanist Association said, well, our members are offended by this. And under some theories of standing allowing folks to get into court to sue, they said, well, based on this, we're going to allege a violation of the Establishment Clause. The district court disagreed with them. But unfortunately, the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals reversed that decision and said this can't stand under the Establishment Clause at the U.S. Supreme Court. However, the court reversed, thankfully, and gave us the good outcome we see today, where the Supreme Court, though a very fractured opinion, did give us the result by 7 votes that this does not violate the Establishment Clause. And there are some good hints in some of the different opinions about the state of Establishment Clause jurisprudence moving forward.
So writing for the majority here in this case was Justice Samuel Alito, and I want to read a passage here from the main opinion. And you're right, then we're going to get into some of the segments here of the actual particular decision, because there were certain peeling offs of different justices who had different perspectives, though in principle they agreed with the majority opinion. Samuel Alito wrote this, quote, "The cross is undoubtedly a Christian symbol, but that fact should not blind us to everything else that the Bladensburg Cross has come to represent. For some, that monument is a symbolic resting place for ancestors who never returned home. For others, it is a place for the community to gather and honor all veterans and their sacrifices to our nation. For others still, it is a historical landmark. For many of these people, destroying or defacing the cross that has stood undisturbed for nearly a century would not be neutral and would not further the ideals of respect and tolerance embodied in the First Amendment." So, Travis, writing for the majority, what is your take on his opinion?
Yeah, so the portion we just heard is from a section of the opinion that garnered five justices in agreement. This is a really interesting opinion because you had that portion written gaining the support of Justice Alito, Justice Roberts, Breyer, Kavanaugh, and Kagan. And their holding, in essence, was, look, if we look to history and tradition and taking note of the religious significance of this memorial, there's no violation of the Establishment Clause. Now, they clearly did not look to the Lemon Test, which has been used in a number of these cases and would have resulted, if applied strictly, in the removal of this memorial. So this is a good result right there, but it's very narrow. It's limited to these historical positions, historical significance and religious significance kind of intertwined. Other sections of Justice Alito's opinion were not joined by Justice Kagan. Those two portions of the opinion were actually stronger on I would put it, digging the grave of the Lemon Test, really noting how Lemon has not served Establishment Clause jurisprudence well. So that's promising right there. And then if we look at some of the concurrences And other opinions, we see justices even further sideline Lemon, I think really laying the groundwork for Lemon to fall in a future case. And just to give our listeners more context, the Lemon versus Kurtzman opinion is an Establishment Clause opinion that requires a number of prongs to be met, that a statute has a secular purpose, does not advance or inhibit religion, does not result in government entanglement of religion. So this really allows the government to have its way and remove a lot of religious expression from the public square. So it's good to see this go. If we follow the hints the court has given us today, we may see it go at some point in the future.
Well, Lemon, for those of you who are listening who don't follow the law like Travis and I do, dates back to 1971. But since that decision, some of the other conservative justices have been critical of the decision. Lamb's Chapel versus Center Mauritius Unified School District comes to mind immediately. That was back in 1993. Thomas even then and Scalia even then said, listen, essentially, this is, in non-legal parlance, too complicated a test, when the Establishment Clause itself is clearly very clear. So let's talk a little bit about the dissent. It was Sotomayor in the dissent and Ginsburg. So what was the emphasis they placed on why they wouldn't join the majority?
Yeah, you know, I think the gist of the dissent, reading through that, is that they, at their core, see the allowing this cross to stand, this cross-shaped memorial to stand, as just, in their minds, an impermissible celebration of one religion over others by the American government. Now, obviously, there are a host of problems with looking at it like that. But I, in trying to get at why, you know, they came to this position, I think we really see justices who are taking extremely hard line with removing anything expressing a religious perspective that's associated with the government, which this cross certainly was. But it's perfectly permissible and constitutional, as most justices today agreed. But if you look at their dissent, that's really the basis on which they rested: hyper-individualized sensitivity to Jewish service members, not, you know, perhaps not wanting to be associated with this cross. But I think if you look at the full context of the case, those concerns are not borne out. It's not a faithful reading of the Establishment Clause in the context of this case. Sarah, I want to go back just to a couple things real quickly, because it's very significant when we look at the Justice Kavanaugh's concurring opinion. Now, he concurred with he agreed with the majority, but wrote a separate concurrence outlining in stronger terms how Lemon should fall and should go away. Justice Thomas wrote an opinion. He concurred in the judgment, but actually wrote a separate opinion saying that this case shouldn't even be before the courts because the Establishment Clause should never have been incorporated to apply to the federal government or to apply to the states. You know, we shouldn't even be here today. Similarly, Justice Gorsuch wrote an opinion saying offended observer standing is just a bunch of hogwash and we shouldn't even be before the courts today. So my point to all this is that when we look at this, we actually have seven justices agreeing with this result, and I would say six firmly siding with the components of all these opinions that would result in Lemon being sidelined, and really looking positively the way ahead as we look at so many of the issues our listeners are concerned about, with public prayer, public monuments, public religious expression, a government official saying something religious and drawing flack from one of these atheist groups. All of that under the Establishment Clause, this is a very positive look at this from the Supreme Court as we look ahead.
I would agree with that. I think what we've got is a win that's qualified. So they've potentially set the groundwork for Lemon v. Kurtzman to be thrown out because it has proven to be such a sticky wicket legally for so long, because it is such a convoluted test. Three prongs, and then under entanglement itself, four other prongs to determine what amounts to entanglement.
You can find out more about the case at tonyperkins.com. While the left continues to attack any outward expression of religion from those on the right, they can't stop you from joining us for the Values Voters Summit coming up in October in Washington, D.C. You'll join like-minded individuals as you hear from dozens of speakers talking about faith, family, and freedom. That website, once more, is tonyperkins.com.
Did you know that babies survive failed abortions? Sadly, many of these babies are denied their human right to life and are allowed to die. Currently, there is no federal criminal statute in place to protect these babies after they're born alive. Congress and state legislatures across the country have responded by putting forth legislation to protect infants who survive abortion. However, leftist politicians have blocked efforts in Congress and in state legislatures to pass the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, which requires that life-saving medical care be given to babies born alive after failed abortion attempts. We must decide as a country where we stand on the issue of infanticide, to either pursue humane protections for those most vulnerable in our society, or continue to subject innocent human life to the whims of abortionists. For more information, visit frc.org/bornalive.
Are you concerned about the future of our country? Do you want to help? Come to the Values Voters Summit in Washington, D.C. on October 11th through the 13th and join thousands of Americans who, like you, want life to be valued, families to flourish, and religious liberty to thrive. Invited and confirmed speakers include Sebastian Gorka, Bill Bennett, Laura Ingraham, and Reverend Franklin Graham. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Did you know that babies survive failed abortions? Sadly, many of these babies are denied their human right to life and are allowed to die. Currently, there is no federal criminal statute in place to protect these babies after they're born alive. Congress and state legislatures across the country have responded by putting forth legislation to protect infants who survive abortion. However, leftist politicians have blocked efforts in Congress and in state legislatures to pass the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, which requires that life-saving medical care be given to babies born alive after failed abortion attempts. We must decide as a country where we stand on the issue of infanticide, to either pursue humane protections for those most vulnerable in our society, or continue to subject innocent human life to the whims of abortionists. For more information, visit frc.org/bornalive.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. On June 12th, in a speech at George Washington University, Politico.com reports that presidential candidate Bernie Sanders argued that the United States is at a moment as urgent as the one it found itself in during the 1930s. Authoritarianism and oligarchy are on the march across the world, he said, and the best way to defeat them is with an emphatic break from the mainstream politics of either party. He also proposed a 21st century Bill of Rights that would ensure the right to a decent job, health care, affordable housing, higher education, secure retirement, and a clean environment. Joining FRC President Tony Perkins to talk about the speech is Congressman Ted Yoho, who serves on the Foreign Affairs Committee and represents the 3rd District of Florida.
Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Tony. I appreciate it. I appreciate the work you do.
Well, thank you, sir. This path, is this a dead-end path? I mean, all we have to do is look a little bit to our south, Venezuela, and I would suggest that the outcome here, the destination, is not too rosy.
No, it's not. And, you know, I agree with him in the beginning. Get away from hatred and divisiveness. Absolutely. Because that doesn't serve our country at all. It doesn't serve any country. But what Mr. Sanders doesn't understand, he must not have gotten well-schooled in this, we are a constitutional republic. We will remain a constitutional republic. And it's that form of system that protects the life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness of all people and offers opportunity. And it's that opportunity for one to succeed that allows them to live the American dream, and that's there for everybody.
Yeah, you know, there's actually some elements in here that I agree with in his speech, and I think there are things that the vast majority of people aspire to and want to see our country move toward. For instance, he talks about corporate cronyism and greed, and I would agree. I think big business has been corrupted, but I don't think you throw out our free enterprise system. I think what's happened is we've lost our moral anchor, our moral foundation, and that's why these things have gone off the rail.
Amen, brother. I mean, you hit the nail on. God's the only one that's going to solve this problem, and it's when the people turn away from their wicked ways and humble themselves that he will continue to bless this nation. And if we don't, he shouldn't. And so it is. It's a moral path that we have to reclaim. And, you know, throughout history, yeah, there's always been immorality and things like that because people are here.
Right.
But we should strive to become more Christ-like as we're taught.
Well, and we don't reject the standard because we don't measure up to the standard. And that's what we've seen happen systematically over the last 50 years, aided by an activist court. We've jettisoned the standard, that moral transcendent standard. I found it interesting, Congressman Yoho, that he said, I'm going to pick up where FDR left off with the New Deal. And he, you know, made a lot of parallels to FDR. And I didn't agree with FDR's New Deal. I think, you know, he gave us a lot of big government that is led to the trillions of dollars of debt that we have currently. But there was one aspect about FDR, and we even talked about it last week as we were looking at the anniversary of the D-Day invasion. There was a moral component of FDR, which Bernie Sanders and the left have completely rejected.
You know, I see that, too, and I think that's very well pointed out in what you said. And I think you pointed out another thing is the big programs that are here today from the FDR era that the Lyndon Johnson era added to, that the Clinton era added to, and then Barack Obama. And I'm sure you've read that essay that Woodrow Wilson wrote in August of 1887. And it was called Democracy and Socialism. And to summarize it, it said that the role of the federal government is to provide and perform for society, and that the federal government can perform and provide better than the individual, and that the individual needs and wants become secondary to society. That's what they have been marching. They, on the left, have been marching for since 1887. Woodrow Wilson was the first one, FDR, LBJ, and you get these massive social programs that wind up doing what Hugo Chavez did. Even in France and England, their socialized medicine is on the brink of failure. In fact, the UK government wanted the doctors to take it back over, and they says, we don't want to be in charge of the national health system. And now France is saying the same thing. They're on the verge of bankruptcy because of their massive health programs.
You brought this up about Chavez, Venezuela's dictator,
sure,
now gone. But how is it that Bernie Sanders can constantly talk about this democratic socialism? And I have not heard, now maybe I've missed it, but I've not heard the media say, Mr. Sanders, compare socialism at our southern border down there, or not our border, but south of us in Venezuela, compare that to the socialism you're talking about. What's the difference?
You know, it all starts with good intentions. We're going to redistribute wealth. And as an aside, all these candidates that are running on the 2020 ticket on the presidential side on the left are talking about reparation and all that. That is going to be more divisive in this country than we've ever seen. But they start off with good intentions on socialism. It's equality and, you know, equalness for everybody. But it always ends in a Hugo Chavez to a Maduro.
Well, I hope Americans are paying attention and not just listening, but they're also borrowing from history and current events as they're unfolding, as I said, down in Venezuela. Congressman Ted Yoho, thanks so much for joining us. Always great to talk with you.
Thank you, Tony. Have a great day.
You can find out more about Ted Yoho, the impact of politics on the family, and many other topics when you visit TonyPerkins.com. While you're there, why don't you join our efforts to send 90,000 thermal baby hats to Speaker Pelosi's office? It's an attempt to show her that life matters at every stage. All the details are there on our webpage, TonyPerkins.com.
If you're like me, you care about the future of our country. Now more than ever, it is vital that we stand up for biblical values. This year, you can. Come to the annual Values Voter Summit in Washington, D.C. on October 11th through the 13th and join thousands of Americans like you who want to change the culture so that human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. This year, we're calling on Americans to pray, to vote, and to stand firm as we fight back to win the culture. Invited and confirmed speakers include Dana Lesh, Sebastian Gorka, Bill Bennett, Laura Ingraham, and Reverend Franklin Graham. Now is the time to stand for truth. There will be opportunities to meet with organizations and attendees that share a biblical worldview on issues like religious liberty, the LGBT movement, the sanctity of life, the realities of socialism, and more. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Today, military personnel are at greater risk than ever of suffering from a mental health condition. On average, 21 active and retired military members take their own lives every day. Richard Gleaston, a military and veteran advocate in the area of mental health, recently shared evidence that faith-based solutions can help stop this crisis. Here's what Richard had to say.
There's new science out that they watch people while they're praying or have a religious relationship. The frontal part of their brain, if I'm correct in remembering what they told me, it strengthens it. It reduces depression, reduces anxiety and stress while you're doing it. So not only did God give us prayer as a way to alleviate our spirit, it also alleviates our mind and our bodies. Our bodies react in a positive way to a faith-based relationship.
Visit frc.org/speakers to hear more. Did you know that babies survive failed abortions? Sadly, many of these babies are denied their human right to life and are allowed to die. Currently, there is no federal criminal statute in place to protect these babies after they're born alive. Congress and state legislatures across the country have responded by putting forth legislation to protect infants who survive abortion. However, leftist politicians have blocked efforts in Congress and in state legislatures to pass the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, which requires that life-saving medical care be given to babies born alive after failed abortion attempts. We must decide as a country where we stand on the issue of infanticide. To either pursue humane protections for those most vulnerable in our society, or continue to subject innocent human life to the whims of abortionists. For more information, visit frc.org/bornalive.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Riverview Christian Academy, a Christian boarding school for troubled teens in Northern California, faces the possibility of closing after it was raided by state investigators earlier this year. According to a lawsuit filed against the state's Department of Social Service, the state admitted later that the raid was prompted by an online article from a left-leaning tabloid that made the investigators think that the school was housing illegal drugs and stockpiling weapons to prepare for an end-time apocalypse. Joining Family Research Council President Tony Perkins to talk about the case is Brad Dacus, president of the Pacific Justice Institute, who is representing Riverview Christian Academy. Here's Tony Perkins.
Brad, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you, Tony.
I read, you know, one of your attorneys that is handling this case said, in 25 years of practice, I have never seen this level of aggression, militant, and ideologically driven conduct by a state agency against a religious institution. Is that an overstatement from what you've seen?
No, that's well said. Kevin Snyder is our chief counsel in the case. It is unbelievable. It's when people understand that this school is part of Teen Rescue Missions. It's a fantastic school. It's a Christian boarding school, very established, very reputable. And to have this Department of Social Services based upon a liberal left-wing tabloid article more than 10 years old, actually, to decide they want to do something here and to raid them instead of knocking on the door, investigating, even if they saw any of that. And what's also alarming is they got a warrant. Mind you, this warrant was based upon something totally incredible, not even founded. And yet, here's this, they were able to find a federal judge willing to grant this warrant for them to leave and traumatize the children. And then after they discovered there was nothing wrong, Tony, instead of apologizing, they said, oh, well, we want to require this to be licensed, not with the Department of Education as a school, a boarding school, but with the Department of Social Services. And even though they're not providing any counseling, that's not a part of what they do. It's a Christian boarding school. And they want all Christian boarding schools, in essence, to go under the control of the Department of Social Services and along with their outrageous mandates.
Which would mean, in part, that they have to relinquish the moral standards that the boarding school requires for those who come, basically conduct. This would allow students to have the right to engage in spiritual and sexual exploration. Is that correct?
Absolutely. So let's say you've got a boy and a girl there, 14-year-olds. They say, we have a sexual relationship.
the school, you know, that their hands are tied. Let's say they want to or experiment with same-sex sexual activity, the school's hands would be completely tied. This is, it's no longer a Christian school. And then even spiritual, religious exploration. This is a Christian school, and yet they would have to allow the student to engage in all kinds of activities, religious and spiritual activities that go against the purpose for why the parents are paying for that child to be there. But also, mind you, this is a private religious Christian school. It receives no money from the government at all. And so this is not only a violation of the religious freedom and freedom of association rights of this Christian school, but it's also an egregious violation of the rights of parents to be able to have their children legally in a Christian boarding school in the state of California.
So where does this stand, Brad? What are the next steps?
Well, we at Pacific Justice Institute, we were called upon, and we went ahead and filed a lawsuit in federal court to get an injunction to try to halt what's going on against the school. They're fining this school now every day that they're not licensed with the Department of Social Services. And the judge said, well, this is still pending as an administrative matter, so I'm not going to get involved. So part of the case was set aside. Part of it is still active, especially dealing with the parental rights issues. The Department of Social Services has doubled down, and they have filed a separate lawsuit in Mount Shasta County Superior Court to try to shut down the school completely, even though it is doing everything right, wonderful results. And the schools sponsored by the state are actually failing miserably with terrible results. So they need to get their own house in order.
All right. Well, we'll be following this closely. Brad Dacus, you guys do great work there at Pacific Justice. So thanks so much for filling us in on the details.
Sure thing, Tony. Thank you.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us. And I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.